Welcome back to Lions Collective, Wednesdays at 6 p.m. Today, we are without our good friend Will Birchfield. He is doing his other job and actually working. Nothing came up, you know, non-sports related. The guy's covering baseball. So Will will be back with us next week, but the crew is here, the three out of the four crew. I'm your host, Jeff Iafredi from Crunchtime Sports. Alongside me, we got Justin, Detroit Football Network, and of course, Golden from The Athletic. Lots to get to. Even though it's the offseason, the Super Bowl was this past Sunday. You know, maybe not the most entertaining Super Bowl to watch, even though, unless you love defense, which I love defense. So for me, it was entertaining, but probably for the average football viewer, not so entertaining. We'll get to some of the takeaways from that Super Bowl. Max Crosby was in the news cycles last 2 weeks or so. His future with the Raiders, we'll get to that as well. Lions free agents, and we'll talk some NFL draft at some point. But how are we feeling today, fellas, post-Super Bowl?
I'm glad that you clarified that Will was working. Because you know how scandalous it'd be if he was having another baby?
Yeah, at this rate, the guy's active. Okay, he's doing his job over there. Shout out Will.
I don't know if you guys saw his Twitter. He's like housing pub subs. I think he's like posting videos or photos of himself eating one a day. So he's busy out there for sure.
Dude, I did that. I went to San Antonio for a Final Four. Just randomly, a friend had tickets, invited me down, and I was down there for 5 days and ate tacos for all meals. They got breakfast tacos everywhere out there, so it was like 14 straight meals of tacos. It was the right move.
Sounds like a dream. It sounds awesome.
So good. So yeah, good.
Sounds awesome. You know, I want to just speak on the Super Bowl because, you know, I had a shout out Kyle, by the way. I was at Dog and Pony Show Brewing. The fellas were all busy, but we're going to have an event there probably the next, 2 months. We're going to have a show there. And so we have things planned at Dog and Pony Show Brewing, but I was there on Sunday watching the Super Bowl, and you know, going into the game, I had the Seahawks. I think did anybody pick the Patriots on the show?
I don't think so.
Were we all on the Seahawks? I think we all were. If I'm not,
I think so.
Yeah, we were all on the Seahawks. But watching the game, there's a lot of takeaways you could probably take away. Not everything always has to be applied to the Lions, but it's just, you know, it's why I love the NFL, because when you watch the Super Bowl, you have years where Patrick Mahomes wins it, and you see superb quarterback play, and you're saying, well, you know, fans are like, well, the Lions got to get one of those, you know, and then you watch another Super Bowl like you did Sunday, and you see a defense that just wrecks the game, and you're like, wait, whoa, hold on. Jared can win a Super Bowl now, but we need that defense. So what were some things that you guys just learned or maybe didn't learn and just took away from the Super Bowl on Sunday when the Seahawks kind of took it home?
I like good defense, so I'm with you. I don't like bad offense. I think this was more – good defense largely. And look, the adage is cliche, but defense wins championships. And you go back and you look, I think it's the last 9 Super Bowls, 8 of them, the winner has held the loser to 22 points or less. So I think there's, you know, clearly a trend there that under the brightest lights, you need your defense to step up. Seattle's defense was obviously phenomenal. Constant pressure on the quarterback. They shut down the run. They forced turnovers. They did all the things that you want out of a great defensive performance. And what's interesting to me was the pressure, right? Like that really stood out very much like Philadelphia in the previous Super Bowl. I think Philadelphia had a more vaunted defensive line than Seattle coming into this one. And I kind of pulled up and looked at the numbers side by side with the Lions. I don't know if, you know, you did something similar, Colton, but you know, the pressure rate, the sacks, the time to pressure, time to throw are all kind of in the same ballpark. I think maybe really what sets Seattle aside is it comes from their interior. And we've talked about that for years. The Lions lacking Levi Onwuzurike last year, not really having a full go, a Lee McNeil, you know, that really set them back. But Seattle doesn't have an Aiden Hutchinson. They don't. You know, DeMarcus Lawrence is a good player, you know, maybe not even peak of what he was in his career, but it really is generated on the interior for them with Leonard Williams and Byron Murphy, who a player I, you know, really like coming out of the draft.
Yeah, I can appreciate a Super Bowl where defense is at the forefront. I really can, especially when, you know, you look at the Super Bowl last year with the Eagles and what they did with their pass rush. And then you look at, you know, the other night's game, like maybe a little boring to watch. Sure. I totally understand that. Maybe people had their focus elsewhere during the game, but I mean, I can appreciate it as someone that loves defense. And, you know, the thing that stands out to you is how many dudes Seattle has on defense. It's not just like one or two game records. Like they have some really solid, like high level above average dudes across the board. It's not just, hey, all right, Hutch, go make a play for us. We need you. Like they're all playing as one and playing together. I think that's what I can appreciate most about this specific group. And then on offense, you know, it's funny, like if you're a Lions fan watching that and you see all these field goals, you're probably like, I wish I had some of that. I wish, you know, my coach, there's some people that are probably out there saying, I wish Dan would kick a field goal.
That was me during the Super Bowl.
Yeah. But like, I think it's easy to play that way when you have like such a,
yes,
like, yeah, just ravenous defense out there, you know? So, yeah. McDonald was definitely taking the points when they were available to him because he knows that his defense wasn't giving up many. So I think it's easy to play that way when you have a group like that. But man, I didn't mind it, man. It was fun. And like that group, they're just an easy group to root for. Like Sam Darnold getting a Super Bowl, Kenneth Walker, a player I covered at Michigan State. Man, I remember, not to pat myself on the back here, but I remember watching his film. I think it was like April of like his only year at Michigan State, watching his Wake Forest tape. And I was like, this kid's really good. I'm surprised some more teams weren't in on him. You know, he's a guy that can elevate an offensive line. He gets yards after contact. He breaks tackles. Like, and I think it took the Charbonnet injury for them to really like unleash him in this playoff run. But I think you're seeing like the value that he brings as a rusher. So, yeah, I mean, it was fun to watch, man. I had a good time. I think my takeaway for the Lions, at least, is that, you know, I think they could use some more athleticism, some more speed on defense, and it's something we've kind of talked about a little bit, but I think they have a chance to do that and kind of beef up certain positions. And we'll talk about some draftings later on, but just getting faster, younger, hungrier, more athletic. I think that should be sort of the goal, to kind of reshape the defensive identity a little bit with faster, younger players. And I think some of those guys can be available in this draft coming up.
I remember talking to some Lions defenders about Kenneth Walker a couple years back, just, you know, you're doing, I guess, the game preview stuff and just getting a feel for an opponent maybe you don't see a whole lot. And one of the linebackers told me that Walker was an extremely difficult guy to cover because he didn't hit the traditional gaps.
Yeah.
Like the things he's supposed to do and that you expect to do, and you're reading the keys, like he just would be unorthodox and buck trends. And it was really tough for them to process him doing maybe some of the things that you wouldn't anticipate the normal running back doing. Obviously you watch, I guess, some of the way he bounced those runs outside. And I understand a lot of those are stretch zone concepts. They're meant to go outside, but just the way he did it, you know, really pushing up on those inside gaps before almost taking a step back to get around that edge. You know, really electric performance for him. I don't think throughout the course of the playoffs we saw a consistent run game being the recipe for success. But when you have two great defensive performances going on, like clearly that was the separator in this one. I want to bring back a point really quickly that Birchie brought up, I think ahead of or just after the conference championships, about elite cornerback play. You know, having that number one guy. And I realize that New England lost, but that game would have been much worse if they didn't have Christian Gonzalez. Like, 100%. He was phenomenal. In my opinion, maybe the best player on the field for both teams in that game. And then obviously you saw the impact that Witherspoon had in maybe more of a non-traditional sense. And that's what makes him so great, right? Like, he plays in the slot. He plays outside. He blitzes. He's one of the best, if not the best blitzing corners in the entire league. And actually just saw a stat today right up your alley, Colton, EPA stat. I believe the Seahawks were number one in run EPA from nickel and dime packages, which, you know, gives you all kinds of defensive flexibility. And so, you know, I think there's a lot of different things where the Lions need to close a gap to get to that championship level, but getting Terrion Arnold to play at that number one cornerback level is one box I think that would really help, you know, the defense on the whole and therefore the team on the whole.
Sticking with the cornerback conversation for a second, just those two dudes you mentioned specifically, it's fun because we all remember that 2023 draft and ultimately where the Lions ended up, but what could have been, I think, is kind of interesting to look back at now. If the Lions were sitting at pick number six and Witherspoon was still available, I think there's a pretty likely chance they just stay there and take him.
Yep.
Just based on some of the hints that came out there that they really liked him. And you can usually pick up some of those clues after the fact, but Witherspoon was a guy that was really high on the board, and it's easy to see why. People were screaming for him, pounding the table. This guy's a lion. He's so physical. He's violent. He's fast. He runs downhill at full speed. He can cover. He can, he makes plays at the point of attack. So, like, his game was perfect for the Lions and perfect for Aaron Glenn at the time specifically. That didn't happen. Trade down from six. Obviously, I think they're pretty happy with how it worked out. Gibbs and then Laporta with the extra pick from the trade down. Then you're back on the clock at 18, and man, Christian Gonzalez is sitting there at 17. You're like, I wonder if they take him here, because he's the guy that I was mocking to them at six in that draft, until the time came, and he was falling a little bit. And I think like the Commanders took Emmanuel Forbes like right before then too.
Yeah.
That's insane. Gonzalez is maybe the best cover corner in this class, and he's athletic, like has the speed, the size, like the combination, that profile there was so enticing. And then for him to go one pick before, now again, I think they're pretty happy with their first team all pro linebacker. It worked out, but part of me wonders if Gonzalez would have been the pick there at 18 had he made it there. I think the Patriots sniped him at 17, I believe, is that where he went? So one pick before, two situations, could have had one of those dudes. But yeah, I think it is probably, going into year three for Kerryon, this is a crucial year for him, and they trade up to get him. So they obviously saw something in him. We've seen the flashes, the potential there, whether it was training camp this past year. I thought he was making strides before he got hurt. The whole start and stop nature of a season did not really help him, but I thought he was making improvements when he was on the field, but he's not one of those dudes right now. And so him getting to that level would be huge for this defense, and can help you elevate in a different way just with internal growth.
David Blau would have been on the table pounding for his brother-in-law.
There you go. Yeah, I forgot about that.
Is that that's a real thing?
Yeah. Yeah. David Blau is married to the Olympic hurdler Melissa Gonzalez, and that's Christian's brother. That. Is that right? Brother, sister?
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. See, I just learned that today.
Digging back a little bit.
Athletic family for sure. And like people were telling me Gonzalez was like a CUDA 2.0 and that they didn't want him because he's going to be a bust. They'd take him that high. And I'm like, their games are nothing alike. He's so much faster, athletic. He's got closing speed. He's got length and everything. Like, I didn't understand that comp. I think people were just kind of scarred from that Okudah pick, which I understand. But those two
it's
dudes.
It's so funny how that works, though, right? Like,
yeah.
They get so scarred based on a school or a position that, like, it's just off the board for 5 years. You can't talk about it.
Ohio State and its first round corners, and it was probably early tight ends for a while until Laporta kind of booked that trend a little bit. So
hey, right now it's Bama tackles with Proctor. Okay. That's how the trend's going with everybody. It happens all the time. So yeah. I did want to bring up the quarterback stuff because Sam Darnold's obviously been getting a lot of praise, rightfully so. He didn't turn the ball over in the playoffs, and that was the biggest. I mean, they had a Super Bowl defense, but Sam Darnold could have easily messed everything up just like CJ Stroud did. I think the Texans had a Super Bowl defense, but when you turn the ball over four times in a playoff game, obviously your chances of winning that game go down significantly. So Sam Darnold did his job. He didn't have a bunch of passing yards or a bunch of passing touchdowns, but he made the plays when necessary, and he took care of the football. And I think what was my takeaway coming out of that Super Bowl, and that's why I mentioned before when we kind of started the show how it seems like in recent Super Bowl history it's been these, what people classify as like elite quarterback play or, Patrick Mahomes is of the world and, Jalen Hurts and those two guys kind of going at it. But I'm looking at the Seahawks team. I'm going, they built a damn good roster around a quarterback that, turned the ball over a lot this year during the regular season. Just didn't turn it over in the playoffs. And I'm looking at Jared Goff and I'm going, well, it reminds me of Jared in LA before he got to Detroit when he was turning the ball over a crap ton and they got rid of Jared. But since he got to Detroit, he's grown into such a good quarterback. I know he's making the cap hits for Sam Darnold's ridiculous. I think his cap hits like a couple million bucks or whatever it is. But take the contract out of it, just looking at the player. For all the people that still doubt whether or not Jared can win a Super Bowl, to me, I think those people should feel much better after watching Sunday's game. Because if you look back at the NFC Championship run, you lost because of you gave up 27 in the second half. And Jared Goff in that playoff stretch, by the way, who people bring up the Washington Commanders game, which I understand. Okay, the turnovers and before that NFC Championship run in LA had turnovers, whatever. He actually played really well in that playoff run. And it seemed like that was kind of, to me, at least at the time, like the match made for the Lions to make the Super Bowl. But I think walking away from what I saw Sunday, I'm going, man, like Jared Goff, not only does he take care of the football really well, even this year with the offensive line and the play caller change, but like people should feel a lot better of that conversation. Like there's very well people out there that still believe it's just not good enough. Oh, I want a guy who can move and run. I mean, Drake May ran for like 70 yards. It didn't really matter because he was getting pressured and he was turning the ball over. But I think one of the bigger things I took away was the defense. But on top of that, the quarterback play from Sam Darnold taking care of it. I think Jared Goff's very capable. And I think people should, you know, stop trying to – I think he's the easy target because he's the most important position in football. But in reality, there's bigger fish to fry. And I think you guys nailed it by mentioning the defense and the offensive line. But people should feel a lot better about Goff after Sunday, in my opinion.
When the Lions traded for Goff, you know, you watch – the individual games, the primetime games, obviously maybe the most electric regular season game of all time, that Monday Night Football game with the Chiefs. So you have a sense of the player, but you know, I wanted to really understand Goff. And so I, you know, did what I do and watched the film and kind of, you know, got a feel for his strengths and weaknesses. And I remember leaving that going, I think Pro Football Focus calls them turnover worthy plays, you know, throws that aren't necessarily interceptions, but are to the defense that should have been intercepted. And Goff had a propensity for at least one terrible, indescribable, like, why would you even do that throw a game? And it was just kind of part of his profile. He did a lot of things really well, but he had that one just boneheaded mistake. And he's pretty much wiped that off of his kind of resume since he's been with the Lions. That, you know, part of that's just the nature of experience, right? Like you've seen so many more defensive reps, what teams are doing to try to attack you. You're seeing the guys on the windows better. You're not seeing ghosts, if you will. And is he perfect? Does he make mistakes? Of course he makes mistakes, but like those big boneheaded errors are so few and far between now. I had this opinion with Matthew Stafford and I have it with Jared Goff. They are capable of winning you a Super Bowl. Do they need other things around it? Yeah, every quarterback needs other things around them. And maybe pocket passers need a little bit more around them, given they don't have that dual threat ability to kind of bail them out on those third and eight scrambles or whatever. But we saw when Goff has a running game, clearly they have more than enough offensive weapons. This offense can put up 30 points a week, no problem. And so you give Jared Goff a defense like Seattle's or like New England's. Oh yeah. God. Yeah. That's a guy that can win you a Super Bowl. It's really cut and dry for me.
Yeah. I would say Goff has shifted from like the one turnover where they play a game to like, now he has like one game a season where he just kind of turns the ball over a lot in bunches. Minnesota this year, was it Houston and I guess the Commanders game the year before. It's always nationally televised. That's what I told you. It's crazy. And that, like, it's funny. Every time that happens, it's like clockwork. I'm writing a story about how Jared's playing really well and how he should be in the MVP discussion.
MVP conversation.
Literally. And then he turns the ball over five times. Everyone's like, oh, Jared Goff sucks. Like everyone on Twitter, I'm like, he doesn't. Guys, I swear he doesn't. that's what it is. So maybe I'm the jinx. I don't know. But yeah, man, Jared's really cut down on turnovers. And like, if I agree with you, Jeff, like if you're watching that game, the takeaway should be like, if we improve our defense, then like we can absolutely be right here. I appreciate these last two Super Bowls in particular because, you know, Jalen Hurts can run, but he's not an alien, right? Like right. Sam Darnold is not an alien. Even like 5 years ago, the narrative used to be, oh, you need a Mahomes, a Lamar, a Josh Allen to win one of those guys to win a Super Bowl. That the last two Super Bowls have proved that's not the case. You just need a high level guy that can take care of the football, make plays when asked, and then, you know, it's a team sport. Like for so long, I guess Mahomes has run dominance and Brady and the Patriots and whatnot, like makes you think that, oh, the quarterbacks win you championships. Obviously quarterbacks have a lot to do with that. You need a dude there, but like if you have enough, and Jared is a very capable starter in this league, he can play at a high level. He was like second in touchdown passes this year, even with all the supporting cast issues with the offensive line. I thought he actually played pretty well, all things considered. So if you give him some help with defense, this offense, you fix the offensive line, like there's no doubt in my mind they can be here next year. It's just a matter of the routes that you go to make that happen. And easier said than done when you got some decisions to make and, you know, you're paying your dudes and trying to, you know, balance that whole future versus present conversation. But In terms of what he gives you at quarterback, you can absolutely win a quarterback. You can absolutely win a Super Bowl with Jared Goff. I believe that. I believed it a couple of years ago. I still believe it now.
Yeah, I'll tell you what. We'll take a break. When we get back, we'll talk about the Max Crosby stuff, and we'll dive into the rest of the topics. But first, I got to tell you about our friends over at Sleeper. We'll see you guys in 30 seconds.
Sleeper is the number one fantasy sports app. It pays to know sports. Pick more or less on top players. Your first pick is on us, so start winning now. Play in Texas, Georgia, Minnesota, and 27 more states. Pick anytime across all sports, pregame or live. Over 10 million players are already on Sleeper. Make your picks count. Score up to 1,000 times your cash. Join today. Get up to $100 credit using code HMA. Call your shot on Sleeper. Download now.
Shout out to our friends over at Sleeper for sponsoring Lions Collective, the best fantasy app out there. Sleeper Picks, we talk about often, but now they have Sleeper Team Picks, and you can choose and ride with your favorite team, whatever fan of whatever team you are. For example, I went with the Detroit Pistons to come out of the East this year. Very simple bet. You can tail. Yeah, I said it. You can tail your team and ride along with it. So shout out to Sleeper for the new addition there. They're continuing to take care of their customers. And if you want, you can use the code HMA, get $100 deposit matched up to $100. Check out, like I said, Sleeper Fantasy, Sleeper Picks, Sleeper Team Picks. They got it all. Shout out to our friends over at Sleeper for sponsoring the show. You know what, guys? We got to talk about it because Max Crosby, I don't know if you guys heard, he's coming to Detroit. Just letting you guys know. So get the jerseys printed. I'm just telling you right now, get the jerseys printed. This is the annual. It's like the NFL calendar. Super Bowl. It's like, you know, you got preseason, season, postseason, Super Bowl, Max Crosby. And then I'm sure Myles Garrett will come in about 2 months. So we got Myles Garrett in about a couple months. So right now it's Max Crosby time. They fire a new regime, or at least the head coach, Max Crosby. He's floating. He got Radio Row, which I think that has to do with it as well. Around Radio Row, everyone starts talking about Max Crosby. He was at Clint Kubiak's press conference. I mean, seems to be supportive of the head coach that they hired. People are like, well, he doesn't want to be part of a rebuild. I've already spoken about this. Like, rebuilds in the NFL, unless you're a garbage franchise, like, look at the Bears. You can, if you have the right people in charge and you have the right head coach, you can turn around things pretty quickly, because that's just how it works. That's why the NFL has worst to first. That's why it's the best sport. It's not like the NBA where you're taking for 6 years with Troy Weaver and you can't figure it out. So I don't think the Raiders are as doomed as the media might put it. So Max Crosby, I think, stays, given, you know, they're going to draft number one, get a franchise quarterback. They're going to add some things. They got a new head coach. But what have you guys kind of thought of that narrative? I keep seeing, like, Jake Glazer actually started it when he went on a couple of shows, and apparently he's speaking for Max Crosby. They are very close, and I got a lot of respect for Jake Glazer, but he pretty much was like, yeah, this guy's out of here. He's not coming back. How have you guys kind of interpreted it? The Lions, I mean, clearly he's already said on a podcast like a year or two ago that if it wasn't the Raiders, it would be the Lions. The problem is, I think he's not leaving the Raiders. What do you guys think of the Max Crosby news? And are you buying a jersey now, or are you going to wait till he joins the team? What do you guys want to do with that?
This is Cold's favorite topic. I mean, just loves it. He's been on it on Twitter for like 6 years. Yeah. I want to hear Colton's opinion, to be honest with you.
Yeah, you know, I remember when this conversation was doused with gasoline like a couple years ago. And I was trying to fan that. I was like, they're not trading for him, guys. They're still trying to rebuild this thing. And they're at a point where they're trying to stick with their guys. And people told me, like, oh, you don't like winning? I'm like, I do. Like, for you guys, that's cool. If you guys want to win, I don't think they're going to try to win like this, is what I tried to say back then. And I still kind of think that. Like, you look at the roster, they definitely have some needs. So trading like what, two firsts and maybe a player, if you want to kind of go with the Parsons package, or two firsts and a third. I don't know what it's going to take exactly if he ends up getting moved. But I am more open to it than I was a couple years ago. So we'll say that. I'm a little bit more open to it than I was a couple years ago, because I think they have a lot kind of in place right now. Like, they've locked up their core guys. They kind of know what those futures look like. For most of those dudes, obviously some of the injuries are going to play a part in that, but if he gets, like, someone's going to get him if he's truly like, I'm out, like, I'm not coming back. Like, they're And honestly, it would be a good move for the Raiders. They don't need like a pass rusher approaching 30 when they're trying to rebuild this thing. Like, you can trade him and get like an ultimate haul for him. And that would kind of be able to jumpstart what you're doing. So I'm not trying to, I see the comments are already, you know, going into some things here. I'm not trying to get anyone's hopes up. I am more open to it than I was a couple years ago. I didn't think it was really realistic at all a couple years ago. Cause I didn't think the teams would trade these guys. Like, the Browns did not trade Myles Garrett, and they were pretty adamant about that. The Raiders were very adamant about saying, we're not going to trade Crosby. But I think if the conversation is more open now on their side and they're saying, well, he's getting up there and we still haven't won with him yet, so maybe it's just time to move on. You know, we'll see if that's the case. Like, I think we'll have to figure out how the next couple months go. But it seems to me, just based on where they're at as a franchise, they might be more open to it this year. Now, all that said, if they put him on the block, there's going to be a huge bidding war for this dude. And I don't know if the Lions can even match what's going to be offered for him. And the Raiders have no incentive to just be like, okay, well, he wants to go to Detroit, we'll send him to Detroit, right? Like, why would you do that? So I guess that's where I'm at with it. Like, I'm sure the Lions would make some calls and get involved and just kind of do their due diligence, see what it's going to take and, you know, whatnot. But outside of that, I'm not expecting anything. I think there are ways to improve the pass rush without trading and a bunch of picks for and taking on that contract and probably costing yourself some future contracts internally by getting that dude.
I had not looked at Crosby's contract since it got adjusted last year. I knew they added a bunch of money to it, and the structure is super interesting. I mean, I feel like they set themselves up to move him if they had to. There's very little dead money on this deal for them in terms of trade. I think he's got $2.5 million in signing bonus and a couple million left in a restructure bonus. So I think they would eat like $5 million. And then for the acquiring team, you know, if we want to compare this to Parsons, which I think is logical, the cap hits are not egregious for an elite pass rusher. You're talking $30 million this year and in that ballpark for the next 4 years, 30, 29, 26 and a half, 27.4. So pretty reasonable. Now the conversation becomes, where do the Lions find the budget, right? Where's the budget for this? They're already over the cap. They're going to have to adjust. We all know that Jared Goff's probably going to get restructured, and that's going to clear up a bunch of money. Decker could retire. That could clear up some money. They could cut Glasgow. That'll clear up some money. But like, you also have a dozen holes or half dozen holes that you have to fill. So adding another $30 million player is a very tricky conversation. It just is.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, it's going to cost you draft equity. It's going to cost you at minimum two first rounders. If we are using the Parsons deal as the blueprint, as Colton suggested, you're also going to have to throw in a player or another high level pick. And I was looking at the roster because you almost have to get rid of a player to clear up some financial burden. And I'm like, who could it be? Like, in my head previously, it would have been Jameson Williams, but like, you just signed him. And so now there's a massive, it would cost more to get rid of Jameson Williams, like double than to keep him. So like, that's off the table. And like, Sam Laporta is off the table because he's hurt. And they also have a tight end. Brian Branch is off the table because he's hurt. And so like, are you willing to trade two first and Jack Campbell or two first and Jahmyr Gibbs, well, probably not Gibbs either because they got Genty. Like, what do the Lions have to offer beyond the first? And I don't know. I don't see that being a likely scenario. Obviously, it would set this town ablaze if they could pull that off. Like,
it'd be awesome.
There isn't a pass rushing combo outside of maybe Hunter and Anderson that compete with this. And if you look at it, Anderson's on his rookie deal, right? Like, they're able to afford that because one of those guys is on a rookie deal. You don't have any team paying top 5-10 salaries to two edge rushers in this league. It's just because it's too difficult when you've got two guys eating up $60 million in cap space. It just limits what you can do everywhere else. And so I would classify it as very, very unlikely, but I mean, look, it's going to give us something to talk about. I'm all for it.
Look, the cap's going up. It's not going up that much, guys. Like, not enough to fit both those dudes in the budget unless you're really reworking the rest of the roster. So I don't know. Like, again, I said I'm more open to the idea than I was a few years ago because I think the Raiders would probably be more open. And, like, the way you hear Dan Campbell, like, when they played the Raiders, I think it was 2023, Campbell raved. Probably go back and see if you can find it, but he raved about Max Crosby. He thinks he's like a dude in this league, which he, obviously a lot of people do. But
he is a dude.
I've never heard him like talk about an opposing player like that. Like, he gives a lot of praise to other people. That I was like, oh yeah, he loves this guy. He'd trade for him in a heartbeat, I think. But obviously they like a lot of their own guys too. And if you want to keep those guys, then that's sort of the conversation to have. And I don't know. So I'm having more of an open mind to it. It's not really their MO to go out and trade for a star like that. So it would be a huge departure from like everything we know them to be. Now, if they get to a point this offseason, they sit down and they're like, you know, we got this window. And I know they don't even think of windows. So me even bringing that up is like pointless. But if they do have a conversation, say, man, adding Max, this is the guy that we've liked for years. Like, I think we're all on board. We know what type of dude he is. Cause the thing that they always say is like, you know, we don't like signing all these like external free agents because, you know, it can, you know, ruin your culture. If they're not the right guys, you don't know how they're going to react after losses, if they're good teammates, all that stuff. Like, we like guys that we know. That's kind of what they tell us indirectly. But like, it seems like they'd all be on board with Max Crosby just on the type of guy that he is, the type of player he is. Like, that's a guy that you can make a move for like that. It's just, how much are you willing to sacrifice in terms of draft compensation, in terms of, you know, getting rid of, you know, maybe you plan to, you know, extend certain guys. Now you can't with that contract in the fold. Like, those are all questions to have. And, you know, I'm sure, like, if he is on the market and is made available, they will have those conversations and kind of weigh the pros versus the cons, as they should, because that's what every organization that needs help defensively should be doing right now if he's available. So, yeah, I mean, it's a tough conversation, but I'm open to it. It's fun, at least for the offseason.
And I mean, just frame it in terms of the offensive line needs, right? Like, you need a center, you need a left tackle. If you trade your first-round pick and you use all your cap space on this guy, where are you getting your Taylor Decker replacement? You know, are you banking on Gio Manu? Because you don't have the cap space to go get out even a mid-range tackle, which is going to cost you $10 million, you know, to think that you can get a plug-and-play one in the middle of the second round is – wishful thinking. Clearly you're going to be able to find the counterexample of a guy that did it, but like 9 out of 10 can't. And you need a center too. And yeah, you could probably find a center in the second round, but you know, there's just so many holes in this roster, and to put all the eggs in one basket and then heaven forbid somebody gets hurt and that basket falls apart. Like, well, now you're screwed even more.
Yeah, people in the chat are mentioning getting their own trade ideas. I saw a couple of trade Aleems in there. That's what I'm seeing in there, trade Aleem. Which, by the way, like, if you want to trade Aleem, you think the Raiders want to acquire Aleem right now? Like, we got to – this happens a lot in sports where fans will be like, oh, this player stinks, let's trade him. Well, if he stinks to you, then the team you're trying to trade him to probably thinks he stinks as well. So I don't think that is probably going to happen unless Aleem's stock is higher and he has a great year and you want to get rid of him. But I don't know how much dead money would be on that anyway. If you trade Aleem,
a lot.
It is
37 mil, almost 38 mil.
Okay. Well, yeah, there's your answer to that question.
I'm going to date myself here, guys, and not apologizing, but like, it's kind of like the running joke in the group text, right? Like, growing up, like, the callers would call into WDFN back in the day, 1130 in Detroit, and like, they would just pitch their Pistons trade proposals. It's always involved like, trade Terry Mills and John Barry for Kobe Bryant. It's like, what? Like, what are you talking about? Like, I'm going to say teams don't want your garbage. Aleem is not garbage, but like, you're frustrated with him for a reason. Why when you're down on him, is another GM going to be high on him? Is your point? It's dead on. Like,
low,
nobody wants the guys you're frustrated with for their best players. They want your studs. You have to give up value to get value. And that's why Jack Campbell was like literally the only player I could find on the roster that has value, that's healthy, that could help offset the financial burden.
Yeah. I wonder if they were just mentioning that because Kenny Clark is the DT and that he was in the Parsons trade, but obviously it's not a one-to-one match.
Yeah. just the position they play, yeah. But there's everything else. Like, there's so much into that contract. No, I don't think Kenny. I think he had a pretty good year before he was traded. He wasn't great, but I don't know. And he's making significantly less money. There's so much more than that. Oh, I did want to ask you guys though. Speaking of just Lions, you know, we're talking about acquisitions through trade, but free agency. Kind of looking forward here in the next couple of weeks. We're going to get into the nitty gritty of it, I'm sure, and talk more about free agency. And you mentioned how they have to restructure and free up some money here. But well, how are you guys kind of feeling getting closer to free agency here in the next couple of weeks? I've talked a lot about free agency. I mean, it's been the talk of really of the offseason heading up to it. You got the combine, you know, talk free agency. How busy do you expect the Lions to be? You know, because I don't know how much exact money they could free up. You guys would know better than I would. Money they could actually free up restructuring guys' deals. But what are you guys expecting? Early thoughts on kind of free agency for the Detroit Lions? Bringing guys back, you know, going, getting outside free agents, et cetera.
You didn't read the clickbait articles of they could clear $120 million with the snap of their fingers?
Yeah, well, I saw it. I did hear it on Strawberry Birchfield. I heard the conversation. I'm going, no way. No way. Yeah,
I mean, of course you can clear all kinds of crazy space and then you just pay for it down the road. Like now you have actually created a window when there wasn't one. Like you've forced a window onto the situation. Look, I look at free agency through two lenses, right? First, it starts with the internal. That is where the Lions have lived. Goes back to Colt's point earlier that they like the guys they like because they know them. And so it's a matter of how many of those guys are they going to resign. I don't think that it's going to be maybe as many as previous years, or certainly not top level. You know, I think probably Anzalone is not going to be resigned. Muhammad for me is a coin flip. I don't know what kind of offer he'll get on the open market, but obviously it'd be a nice retain. And I'm not even convinced that they're going to resign Amik Robertson. I think they're going to do a lot of bargain shopping. Guys like Rocky Sin, Grant Stewart, maybe Malcolm Rodriguez, who might be a value because he's coming off the injury and didn't do a whole lot. Roy Lopez, who adds depth to your defensive line. And then it's what level of that money that you clear up, because they will clear up money. I don't know exactly how much, but my guess is by the time they reach free agency, they'll probably be 25, 30 million under. And they'll use half of that. I have to imagine offensive line will be priority in free agency. Free agency is where you plug your needs. Draft is where you chase best talent available. And they have needs at offensive line. And, you know, I'm still very zeroed in on that center position. I know, you know, the Linderbaum stuff's going to keep coming up. I don't think Baltimore is going to let him reach the door. And then you dip in kind of that second tier, that Connor McGovern territory. And I could absolutely see the Lions finding a way to land a very solid and stable starter. And I'm very much I like Will's idea from a couple weeks ago. I like the idea of shopping that trade market and, you know, calling Arizona and seeing what they want for Froholt. He's not a superstar, but, you know, could provide some stability, both performance-wise, schematically, that lets you maybe go in the draft a little bit later and develop a guy.
Yeah, I'm with you on the center position specifically. Like, as I'm gonna kind of getting to know some of these draft prospects, like, I think you should still draft a young center, whether it's this year or next year, but I definitely would lean towards either free agency or the trade market for center, because, you know, if you thought that maybe Tate could be a long-term center and then you put him out there for like, oh, 4 days, and then you said, okay, let's put you back at guard. You're good there. That tells me that maybe they don't think that anymore. Now, they haven't said that yet, but that's kind of where my mind went, just on him not getting any reps there after the first 4 or 5 days of training camp. And after that, I'm like, okay, well, if they do think he's the center this year, you still need like some insurance just in case he's not the guy there, because putting him at center without a backup plan is sort of malpractice, in my opinion, for a guy that's never played in a game at center above the high school level. And I don't even know if he did in high school, but he didn't do it in college. He hasn't done it in the NFL. So to me, you got to get a center, and it's, I think you got to get a proven guy. This is too important. You just went through a whole year where center was a liability. And so to me, like, there's some options in free agency. McGovern, Cade Mays didn't have the best year, but maybe in a different system, he can bounce back and have a good year for you. Or, you know, scour the trade market. So as I'm looking through draft stuff, I'm not even really looking at centers. Like maybe like a Connor Liu from Auburn, if he's available at a certain pick, coming off an ACL injury, maybe you can get him at a discount. Logan Jones, the Iowa center, although he's a little bit small, so I'm not so sure about him. But
Jake Slaughter, Florida.
Yeah, he's another guy. So there's some options that you could probably get on like late day two, day three. It'd be easy if you had a third round pick, but you don't. I think center for free agency makes a lot of sense. I still like tackle in the draft because they're going to need a long-term answer for Decker. But, you know, if there's not one that you love, we know how Brad Holmes operates. Like, he's not going to reach for one. Like, just because that guy plays tackle and the Lions need a tackle, he's just not going to, like, grab that dude in the draft if he thinks there are, like, 10 better players on the board at, like, various positions. He's not just going to say, well, I'm going to take the guy ranked 42nd on my board because he's a tackle instead of the guy that's ranked, like, 11th on my board and he's there at 17. You know, like that's not what he does. So if you can get like a serviceable tackle free agency just as like insurance for that in case you swing and miss in the draft, like that's probably what they're going to do, if I had to guess. Like, but I do think offensive line is going to have to be a priority.
Yeah, that the way you're describing like drafting for need is a quick way to water down the quality of your roster. I mean, really, really quickly, if you're drafting a tackle that, as you said, 10 picks lower on your board, and you do that consistently year after year after year, it's how you build a shitty roster. It is. I think one thing I really like about how Brad approaches the draft, and not saying he's hit every time because he hasn't, but I like that he is willing to trade up in the first round to marry the need with the board, right? He did it with Jameson. He did it with Terrion in 2023. He actually traded back, but still kind of accomplished the same thing that, you know, he had a vision, a need in mind, and then was willing to pay the premium to kind of work into that range where they still saw value for that guy. And so, you know, who knows with not having any third rounders, if they have that kind of flexibility this year. But, you know, I'll admit right now, I'm not totally familiar with the draft classes quite yet, but if there's an offensive tackle, say they love it 13, 14, and they're at 17 and they have an opportunity to move up for a future or a fourth or a future fourth or whatever, like, yeah, you should go get the guy you believe in, to fill that premium position.
Yeah. In terms of their own internal free agents, like if we just want to go through a couple names here, like you mentioned Anzalone. What do we think about him? Back or no? You said, no. I think you said no.
I don't think he's back. It's a super tough decision. Like it is. Like he's a really good player. He brings energy, he brings leadership. It's also gonna be 32 he turns this offseason, I think, maybe August. You're looking at probably a 2-year deal in that, I don't know, $18 million range. Like it's the right value for what he brings to the field. But again, I look at the budget, their needs elsewhere, and I think they'll probably look, we got Jack Campbell who we're going to pay. We already paid Derek Barnes. That's a decision we made, and probably at some level feel like they can move Derek Barnes back more into the off-ball role to kind of replenish or replace, and then they can get back to, you know, playing a little bit more nickel, a little less base.
Yeah, I tend to agree. And that's what I think my next one on here, Amik Robertson, you know, what do we think? Because I would love, like, he's a great quote. Like, I think all of us enjoy talking to him, but I do wonder if they go a different route there. And not that he's going to cost a lot, but like, you know, I think if Brian Branch were healthy, like going into this year, I would put him back at nickel and try to just get like another safety and just say, you're going to be, again, a hybrid player. Not that he didn't do that last year, but just make him full-time nickel the way that some of these other defenses are using their nickels. Cause he was so good at that as a rookie. And I'd like to see that happen again, but obviously he's injured and don't know when he's going to come back. And, you know, it's a different conversation right now, but Amik, I mean, I almost wonder if you try to get like a fast line. Like I did a mock draft, me and Nick Baumgartner, and we took Kyle Lewis, the Pitt linebacker. Oh, he's 6 foot. Okay. He's 6 foot, like 220. Looks like a safety the way he like runs around the field, but he's like a linebacker technically. But he's sort of this like big nickel that you could put out there, or you can make him your weak side linebacker as an Anzalone replacement, because he's good enough against the run to handle those responsibilities as well. But he's great in coverage, really instinctive, plays downhill. Like, I think they need some demons like that. And like, if you can make him your big nickel, and like instead of a true corner like a Meek, and you go that route, sort of a hybrid player, I think that'd be a lot of fun and a way to continue your defensive structure while just changing and tweaking some pieces on the field. And I think that would make a lot of sense for a coach like Kelvin Shepherd, who could kind of utilize these linebackers in different ways.
And look, Ennis Rakestraw is still on the roster. And I know we haven't seen a whole lot of him last year, but he's a $1.5 million player versus the five or six or whatever that Robertson's going to cost you. And so I think what you do is you can't go in counting on Ennis Rakestraw. You have to get that backup, stopgap, veteran, cheap, and Avante Maddox type, right? That can, push Rakestraw in camp. And then if, Ennis gets hurt again, you've got a fallback option that's a vet. I'm sure Arthur Mollett's available.
If he's available. I think if he's a free agent. Run it back.
Get him back in the room.
Yeah. Playmaker. That's what he is. Before we get out of here, you mentioned the first round pick. We talked a little bit about it. I think the feeling now is, I think, would we agree? I know it's hard to say now, I guess, because you don't know who's going to be there. But I think trading back in the first round will probably be in the Lions' best interest, considering you need to gather more picks. I think the best thing for fans, like I can speak for this, you want your GM to always trade up. Okay, it's more exciting. You want to see it. You want to see Brad jump to five and get Francis Maui-Goa. All right, that's what I want to see. But in reality, it's not going to happen. So I would say at 17, the best interest is to trade back. And I think what Brad does really well is, I think if you were to trade back in this draft, I think it's one of those drafts where in the 20s, it could go, a lot of things could happen to where I think that's kind of in Brad's like wheelhouse, where I think he could find a guy that maybe fans get pissed off in the first like 8 days, 9 days. And then you start watching.
Never.
Film. Okay. No. and then you're like, okay, this guy might be good. But I think this could be one of those drafts where I think Brad trading back, not only being able to pick up more assets, but I think he'll be able to cook a little bit in that first round. So I'm excited for it, man.
This goes back to what you were saying earlier about, trading Aleem, right? Like, there's got to be somebody that's worthwhile to trade up for, that commands the interest of a team, whether it's a quarterback or an offensive tackle, which happens to overlap with your needs. And so it's just really tough to say, because at 17, like, who knows how those first 15 picks will roll out. But if you do have the opportunity to move down and you have a range of five or six players that you kind of like equally, that's always a good move. If you can find a way to get that third rounder replenished or pick up an early fourth to kind of backfill that gap, that would be a positive thing for Holmes and the Lions.
I'm very, very early on draft deep dives. But Nick and I did do the mock draft today, and we did trade down from 17 to 24. I think the Browns wanted to come up. I'm like, all right, what you got? Give me that third. That third's looking good. So we traded 24 and I think 155 in the fifth, 17 and 155 in the fifth for 24 and 70 in the third. And on the Rich Hill trade chart, it was perfect math. Now maybe the Lions could get more. Like, I think a scenario that could make sense is if teams like Ty Simpson, like the Alabama quarterback, right? Probably not like a top 10 guy, but like a Jackson Dart type where like he's available and a team might come up for him. If that's the case, then you can trade back seven spots and pick up a third. I think it would make a lot of sense. And we took the Miami edge, Akeem Mezidor, 24th. So that fills the edge need, even though they don't draft for need. Second round, we took, I don't even know how to say his name, the Arizona tackle, Max Ikey. I'm not going to botch this.
Yeah, it's like, I know what you're talking. I know who it is.
Max Iheanacher. We'll say that. Yeah. Max Iheanacher. I have no idea.
Iheanacher. Right. I don't know. It's hard to pronounce. It's really hard.
we liked him. It's like, okay, we need a tackle. We didn't ignore that position, so we get a tackle in the second. At 70, we took Kyle Lewis, the Pitt linebacker, and he's going to be like our big nickel, weak side linebacker hybrid. And then in the fourth, we kept our fourth round pick. We took Harold Perkins, the LSU linebacker, who was a stud as a freshman, like All-American, like had 7.5 sacks, like 50 something pressures, kind of too small to play edge full time in the NFL. But if you put him at Sam as like a hybrid player who can rush the passer and then, you know, play the run a little bit, I think he's good enough for that. He definitely improved as a traditional stack backer over the last couple of years. Now all of a sudden, like he's going to run like a 4.4 40. So like now you're getting athleticism, you're getting pass rush juice, you're getting a coverage linebacker, you're getting a first round edge, and then you're getting a tackle. So I think we cooked on that mock draft, but I think something like that where you can just add dudes and young demons to your defense and then get a tackle for the future and then handle other stuff in free agency, that would be a really good offseason for the Lions. Like a similar plan like that or something along those lines, I think would make sense for them.
Did you ask the Browns for the final year of Jim Schwartz's deal just to make him a defensive assistant?
As a sweetener? I should have.
Yeah. Assistant. Maybe could have helped.
No doubt. I'll ask for Myles Garrett, too.
See what and Shedeur Sanders. Throw in Shedeur Sanders. Why not?
We'll give him Terry Mills.
Yeah. Yeah, there you go. By the way, the draft, speaking of the draft, I know it's very, very early in the process, but Dog and Pony Show Brewing has a big event planned for the draft as well. So Lions fans, stay tuned for that on draft night because you can head over, have some beer, watch the draft, cheer for your favorite team and draft most likely a pick you're upset with. But you know what? That's the fun of the draft, all right? That's why we have fun. We're having fun here like we always do. We appreciate you guys. Hit the like button on the stream. Hit the subscribe button as well. Shout out to Birchie. He'll be back next week. He's out here grinding. All right, he's taking care of business. Until next week, Jeff Iafrati, Justin Rogers, Colton Pouncey, we appreciate you all, and we will catch you next Wednesday. But until then, we'll see you.